Greetings. The Online Indian Journal of Peace and Conflict Resolution is delighted to host another episode of the Indian Conflict Resolution Podcast. The aim of the podcast is to consult experts and conduct dialogue around conflict and political issues in South Asia and provide our listeners with diverging opinions and accurate information. My name is Madhul Sharma, and I will be your host for today. Our guest of honor for today's episode is Dr. Manjari Singh, an assistant professor at Amity University. She has previously served as an associate fellow at Center for Land Warfare Studies and obtained her doctorate from Jawaharlal Nehru University, New Delhi. She specializes in sustainable development and the Middle East. Welcome, Dr. Singh. How are you doing today and where are you speaking to us from?
Thank you, Madhul, for giving me this opportunity to share my thoughts with you. And really glad to be at this forum. Thank you.
Starting with the questions, how do you think that sustainable development goals play a key role in keeping peace in our subcontinent today?
Okay, so if you look at it, sustainable development goals did not emerge just like that. You know, there has been a considerable shift in the discourse, international relations discourse, in the discourse of security studies. So we know that, you know, the world has fought two world wars, that was in 1940s, 50s around. So that was the time when, there was this security studies or the international relations was primarily focused on protecting the borders. That was the only security threat that you had with the adversary in military terms. But that kind of shifted in the 1980s, you know, like especially after the both world wars were over. And then the countries were focusing on modernizing their economy, modernizing their economic development so that there can be growth. They were recuperating from the world wars, the destruction that has been caused during the world wars. Then gradually by the 1980s, there was a very interesting turn of events and more environmental studies and human security angle were, you know, looked at. So it was, we all know that Barack Hussein is sort of, you know, he's credited for including non-traditional security aspects in the national security perspective. So it was spent, and that is also the time when 1987 sustainable development was, defined exclusively by the Brundtland Commission. So there was a shift in the international discourse, and it was felt that not just the military power, not just the hard powers, but also the internal issues such as, you know, food security, such as water security, such as environment, social norms, all these things are also, you know, important if they need to be tackled if we are talking about security. So that was the time when security came into being, when the non-traditional security aspects came into being. Now, coming to your question on the subcontinent, how it is important sustainable development goals. If you look at it, the subcontinent is not majorly going for war right now. I mean, there has been shift. There are conflicts of first, low level conflicts, low intensity conflicts of course, but there is no, you know, increasingly war is not happening. But this is also the region wherein, you know, there is food security. However, levels have gone up. Mm-hmm. Poverty is one problem. Food security, water security, all these aspects. So all these non-traditional aspects, all these non-traditional threats are grappled in the subcontinent. So I think that is the reason why sustainable development, if you look at all these 17 goals that are there, mm-hmm. most of them are talking about the country's development in a sustained manner. So that is important more in the current context with this. If you look at the COVID, for instance, the subcontinent was grappled by the food security issues, by, oil security, energy security for that instance. So that's the reason why these sustainable development goals, and we all know that South Asia specifically is one of the regions which is highly populated. So there's population pressure as well. Mm. There's lack of resources and there's extra population residing on that dependent on those resources. So that is the reason why sustainable development in our context becomes more important.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, since this is your area of specialization as well, could you tell us more about India's relationship with the Middle East and how it can, like, you know, play a more effective role towards attainment of these goals? And also, could you talk a little bit about what the SDG priorities are for both these regions and do they coincide?
Yeah. So, you know, even for Middle East, if you look at it, it is because most of the countries, especially the Gulf, they are oil economies. Right, so which means that they are geographically very hot countries.
Right,
so climate becomes an important factor. Then, because you know there is a major need, 90% of the land is deserted.
Mm-hmm.
So there is very little land which is available for agriculture. So again, food security. We all know that most of the during the Russia-Ukraine war, it was seen that, you know, food crisis was felt in the Middle East because most of the countries in this region were dependent on both the countries, Russia and Ukraine, for their food imports. 90% have their food imports. So what I'm trying to say is that agricultural land is very limited. So food security, again, of course, most of the Gulf countries, if you look at it, they are rich nations, they are rich countries. But then you will have to import food from other countries. And then COVID stopped that as well. Right? COVID locked the borders. So you can't really import food from outside, and that is why there was a talk in the Middle East that, you know, we will have to sustain our food, we have to grow ourselves. But how do you grow when 90% of our land is inedible?
Yeah,
right. What do you do? So in that context, I feel that the relationship of India with the Gulf nations, as well as simultaneously with Israel, because we all know that Israel is one of the topmost countries when it comes to agri-tech technologies,
right,
and in water conservation technologies. So, you know, in a very holistic manner, working, and especially with the Abraham Accord and everything, there has been a platform available for India to collaborate with many countries, with the Arab Gulf, as well as with Israel, in these aspects, and that is what India is doing. We know about IGUTU, right? So IGUTU, if you look at it, what is the focus? The focus is on sustainable development, goals. For example, the current focus is on food security. It's on energy security,
right?
So these are the aspects that are being... So, you know, this kind of fear, like I was talking in the beginning, that the subcontinent is grappled by these kind of threats, the non-traditional threats. Similarly, even the West Asia has these kind of threats in a different manner, in a different intensity, but of course they also have it. And like I said, that most of the Gulf nations are also oil economies. So they are energy dependent countries, energy conserving countries. So energy, we all know, is a non-renewable source. Right, so it is not going to stay for long.
Yeah.
So which means that they also need to diversify their economy.
Yeah.
So there has been, since 2000s, there has been a drive to, you know, towards economic diversification, and that has given more leverage to the countries in the region as well as to India to cooperate on these areas. So because of these things, because of these factors, you see that we have also signed strategic cooperation agreements, strategic partnership agreements with these countries.
Yeah.
So the aspects that are there in these, in these partnerships also focus on the non-conventional areas, majorly on the non-conventional areas, and especially with the multilateral forums like IGUTU or at trilateral level with India, UAE, Israel, or India, Egypt, and France. These are the areas which are more focused. So, you know, so that's the thing, that they know both the regions, if you look at it, they have similar kind of threats.
Right.
So that is why we are sort of, you know, engaging on these areas of, or in these fields.
Right. And, you know, you talked about some steps that, you know, both regions have taken in this direction already. But do you think our strategic partnership, especially recently, you know, with so many visits here and there, do you think our strategic partnership with the Middle East can affect our strong relationship with Israel in any way?
On the contrary, it's going to complement the relationship.
Okay.
We have seen that right now, that, you know, since we, India for a very long time, since 2000 has been, earlier as well, but more prominently since the 2000s, it has had a very independent kind of non-prescriptive, independent, and non-interventionist kind of relationship with the Middle East. And that is one of the reasons why it was able to balance its relationship with the regional enemies, if you may say.
Yeah.
For example, Saudi Arabia, Israel on one hand, and Iran on one hand, all three countries not talking to each other, not sitting at the same table. But India has been able to balance its relationship with all the three regional players, right? So that kind of foreign policy that India had devised has sort of helped it to, you know, maintain its clout in the region.
Right.
And it remains like that. Right now, what is happening is that we see that there were clandestine relations between Israel and Arab countries. But now with the Abraham Accord, with the normalization of relations between Arab and Israel, we see that there is a lot of space left for India,
mm-hmm.
a lot of space available for India to form a, you know, multilateral kind of equation with the countries in the region, including Israel.
Right.
And like I said in the earlier question as well, that Israel has, you know, you cannot ignore Israel right now.
Exactly.
Because what is happening is that Israel has technology. It is working brilliantly in those aspects. It has certain, plus points, certain USPs, which now the other countries have it, even if they are rich economies. So they would want to cooperate with Israel. They would want to work with Israel. Earlier, they were working in a very clandestine manner, but now openly. And that is why you see that US comes into picture, India comes into picture. So there's a trans-regional kind of partnership that is being formed.
Right.
So this is a strategic partnership that we had with the countries in the in the Gulf, in the Arab world, as well as with Israel, that is now becoming more trans-regional in character. So it is only complementing, and I think because India's focus is more on the sustainable geoeconomics, because of that aspect, because we are not talking about other things, we are not talking about, you know, we are not interfering in the internal affairs of the countries. We are not saying that, okay, Israeli elections are not going well, okay, we will not side with the ruling party, we'll side with the opposition. We are not saying that.
Right.
Similarly, we are not saying we don't have an opinion when it comes to the Gulf countries, right?
Yeah.
So we are not meddling with their internal affairs. But at the same time, we are also coming up with ideas wherein all the countries, the same similar problems that everyone is facing, we are sort of, you know, engaging with them in those aspects. So it is a win-win situation for everybody.
Yeah.
So I think that it's more complementary in nature. Yeah.
That's very interesting. And I would like to go a little bit off topic here, if you don't mind. But, you know, I think you're right. I think it's definitely important to collaborate on issues that are common to all of us. But what do you particularly think about this balancing act that India has with a lot of these countries, including, for example, when, you know, the war broke out between Russia and Ukraine, and India's always managed to kind of keep this neutral, side of it. Like, so what do you think about that? And do you think that's correct in, like, maybe a moral sense, or, you know, just what are your thoughts on it?
Okay, so this is my perspective. Okay, so what I feel is that India is trying to give its own perspective, Indian point of view,
mm-hmm.
right? So what is India trying to say is, you know, if you are aware of the Indian elections, there is one option, which is
yes.
the option of NOTA,
mm-hmm.
right? Right not to vote.
Right.
And that is also a quantifiable, you know, indicator. It tells the country that these many people are not going to sort of, you know, side with either of the parties.
Yeah.
Similar thing India is doing right now, right? I mean, if I can draw a parallel. Similar kind of thing, that we are not siding with the Russia in that aspect, but we are not also siding with the Western world.
Yeah.
Their point of view. We have our own point of view. By abstaining and by, you know, taking the middle path, it is showing that this is the third option. And I think that is what our external affairs minister very clearly had pointed out, that just because we are not siding with you doesn't mean that we are opposing you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That also means that we have a different perspective than you, and that is acceptable.
Right.
In the current, you know, multipolar world, that kind of attitude is acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So why not?
Yeah.
That is what I'm trying to say, that this is the third point of view, Indian point of view, that is coming out very emphatically And I think in the coming years, we'll see more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what we are doing. So Balancing Act is also, you know, we are living in a world where national interests have become more important than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We are talking about strategic autonomy. We are talking about strategic hedging. Strategic hedging is a concept which allows countries to also sort of, you know, engage with their adversaries in different other aspects. So why not?
Yeah.
So that is what India is doing right now. So by balancing, it is showing that this particular thing helps its own national interest. And that is why it is its own perspective to, you know, to side with one country or not to side with the other country, something like that.
Right. So you think this is like an extension of maybe like a Nehruvian non-alignment kind of movement, right?
Yes, non-alignment, yes, but plus national interest.
Right.
It is non-alignment 2.0.
Maybe,
but here non-alignment is not just non-alignment. Like earlier we would say that okay, we are not aligning with other paths, with none of the paths. Right now what we are saying is we might align, but based on our national interest.
Right.
Even terms and conditions involved.
Yeah.
So we will try to, you know, engage. It's not like we are engaging with US also. At the same time, we are engaging with Russia also. But again, it will, all of it will be based on our national interest. If it doesn't serve our national interest, we will not, even if we are like best friends with that particular country.
Right. And do you think this is a good way to sustain long-term peace? Or do you think this is something that's kind of momentary and, you know, there's something we need? And, you know, we're just kind of acting on it.
To be very honest, if India can sustain this,
right,
then of course it is going to, you know, put it at the global high table,
mm-hmm,
with its kind of, you know, perspective. And that kind of perspective, I think most of the developing countries would want to, you know, align with. So if it can sustain, the question is if it can sustain. It's not like, you know, you are saying it for, like you rightly pointed out, that you are saying this for, you know, couple of years, that okay, we are not, and all of a sudden then you just change.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing will not be, you know, it won't be a long-term, it won't serve the long-term purpose. But if they are say that this will be our perspective, it will remain our perspective for a longer time, then of course it is going to work.
That is very interesting, actually. I think but I do think it's not very Indian of India to not be nosy. But, you know, I think it's important and it's fair.
Yeah.
But my last question to you, which is back on our topic of sustainability today. What kind of conflict resolution and peacekeeping strategies do you think would be in accordance with India's personal sustainability goals? And how can we keep in line with them?
Okay, so currently, if you look at it, and I think, you know, Verizon and dialogue is, you know, inevitable. It's coming. It's incumbent, and there was a you know, interview of Dr. Jaishankar in Sydney when they were, you know, organizing a prelude to the Verizon and dialogue. In there, it was very, you could see the body language of the foreign minister. He was very confident, very, not overconfident, by the way, but confident.
And
so what he was saying is that we reject the European order. What is the European order? The European order that he's talking about is very stringent, very institutional in character, which means that you will have to follow certain rules, right? You would have to follow these rules, these regulations, and you have to follow the channels. That is what the European order is all about. They are also saying that India is not going to, and I wrote an article on this, that India is not going to follow the Western model, the American, you know, perspective of development, which is basically based on security provision. So that kind of model also India is not trying to follow, because first of all, it does not have the capability. We don't have the capability to be protectors of everybody. We have to protect ourselves first.
Right.
So that kind of a model is also not something that we would advise. I mean, India would, you know, carry forward. Third is the Chinese model. So India is saying that we are trying to reject that as well, because it is purely geoeconomic.
Right.
And when it is purely geoeconomic, it is also very selfish.
Right.
You only talk about your own growth, your own development, right? So that kind of model is also obviously Right now, it may succeed. It is seen that it is succeeding, but in the longer run, it is not sustainable.
Yeah.
So that kind of model is also, and secondly, you know, to be very honest, India does not again have the capability to, you know, channel that kind of geoeconomic, order. So that is also not Indian point of view. That is also not that India is going to focus on. The fourth model is the Russian model. And it's disruptive in character. So it is revisionist, it is disruptive in character. That kind of model, of course, India cannot, it cannot afford to channel. So it has come up with us for fifth order. The fifth order and the fifth option is that, like we were talking about, sustainable development. So what it is going to say, what it is saying is that we will create corridors, and they are creating corridors, by the way, wherein economy, that is spread, trade, energy. So, you know, like I said in the earlier discussion, that India, with these countries, it is focusing on energy, especially clean energy. So right now, you know, in January, when the Egyptian president was here in India, we had signed a cooperation on clean energy, on green hydrogen. We are doing similar thing with a similar kind of, cooperation with Israel, with the UAE. So green hydrogen, clean energy. So clean energy is something that India would want to work on. Why? Why? Because in the coming times, it wants to reduce its carbon footprinting.
Right.
Right. And on the other hand, it also wants to reduce its import from the countries, because it is seeing that, you know, Russia is going on war. Right. And it has limited European import of oil. So that kind of situation, India doesn't want to get into. Because if tomorrow, and we all know that West Asia, Middle East, whatever we call it, is prone to conflicts. If it was for a conflict, what will India do? If it is, you know, 55% of your energy is coming from that region.
Right.
So you focus on clean energy to make it more sustainable. Plus, you also focus on clean energy with these countries, so that they also, you know, try to sort of, you know, focus on these areas.
Right.
Then it talks about food security. Like I mentioned that COVID, with COVID, Russia-Ukraine conflict, it was very much pertinent that food is one aspect that is, you know, most hit. You know, providing food, and especially with the kind of population that we have in India, food security is important for us.
Right.
So food security comes another aspect wherein we want to cooperate with countries. So we are cooperating with Egypt, we are cooperating with Israel, we are cooperating. We know, I think you are aware of the fact that Israel is creating many centers of excellence in India, which are food corridors basically. Similarly, it is doing that with UAE as well. In fact, Israel has gone to the extent of sending its agriculture and water taxes to India.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one of its kind collaboration that the two countries have. Mm-hmm. So these are the aspects. So basically, these combined together, all these aspects combined together are called as the Grey Rhino. Mm-hmm. So India is trying to focus on the Grey Rhinos. It is trying to combat the Grey Rhino events, because it sees that in the larger run, these are going to be more important than the black swan events like Russia-Ukraine war or COVID.
Right.
Right. So focusing on Grey Rhinos will be more profitable. It will be more collaborative. It will be more, you know, it will open more channels for countries to join in, because, you know, it is something that, you know, is more engaging. It helps everybody. And it is also a way to resolve the conflicts in a non-military way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like I said, the strategic hedging. So you can include Pakistan, because Pakistan is facing flood crisis, right? And China also, because they also have population pressure. They also have certain... So you can engage with your adversaries on these aspects. So it gives you more options to sort of, you know, to engage. So I think that kind of conflict resolution aspect, wherein to focus on the Grey Rhino events, I think... and the sustainable development again, that kind of thing is more, you know, Indian way of looking at things. So if I think India would be focusing on these aspects more than anything else.
That is very interesting. I actually have learned a lot from this conversation, as I'm sure our audience will as well. Well, thank you, Dr. Singh, for joining us today. And for those of you listening, please join us next month for our next episode, where we will bring you interesting speakers on issues that concern our subcontinent. Thank you for joining us today. Please visit our website for more information on what we do. We look forward to receiving your feedback and questions. Stay connected and stay tuned.